almost caused confusion and delay.
You have caused
confusion and delay.
I think you are facing prejudice.
Daisy is just the ultimate thought. Daisy is just the ultimate thought. Your impatience has caused confusion and delay.
I can. Are you stupid, eh? Are you a stupid fool? Well, why can't you drive then? You can't even drive. Be great today.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Deepest Lore. Pharaoh is back. How are you doing, Pharaoh?
Yes, very good. Thank you very much.
When was the last time you were on? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah,
3 weeks
ago. Just a couple of weeks. Is it that long?
I think. Well, I did. Last week I put out some very old Ric Flair shows.
Ric Flair stuff, yes, of course, yeah.
And then week before I think I had Catherine Dion.
Yes, your internet culture.
My internet culture one, which is kind of a good tie-in with these video game console advert reviews that we're doing.
Yeah.
But also, since you were last on, Pharaoh, you directly inspired, or our last stream inspired this.
Super Mario Brothers 2.
Game Watch! Game Watch! Game Watch! Game Watch! It's a demo Game Watch! Throw demo Game Watch! Call a demo Game Watch! Game Watch!
Judge! Ball! Burning! Fire! マイクロコンピューターを使ったゲームウォッチ。ゲームをしないときはデジタル式高圧時計です。ゲームウォッ
チ。So what do you think of that as an advert?
I mean, you've just overlaid a whole load of images over the top of someone else's advert, but it is without a doubt one of the most catchy theme tune adverts I've heard for a little while. So what you need to do is you need to get guards to do like a version of that where they just like talking pseudo Japanese about the academic agency at the end. You know, I was thinking about the next advert, and there's got to be a way. You know how like in radio stations they always get the like the rock artists to be like, oh, this is, I don't know, Jimi Hendrix or whatever, tune into RFKD 70 or something like that. We need to start to record. We need to, you know, at some of these conferences, you need to get people to record endorsements of the academic agency. You know, Poe was at that NatCon.
You know,
get Gove. Imagine Gove.
I took foundations of writing, and now I'm the Home Secretary.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, that would probably be a negative if we've got those guys. But my dream is that we one day meet Tony Blair and convince him to do a little ident for the Trivium.
Well, have you seen the Tony Blair Institute is trying to go back to fundamental skills in education?
Exactly. This is what I'm talking about. You know, you need to contact them, highlight the course. Offer, you just give them a special discount code, Blair25.
Yes, well, indeed. Unless, of course, Tony Blair just has me arrested on the spot as a
stalker,
as a danger to the state, or whatever, danger to him personally, or whatever. Anyway, anything you'd like to promote, Pharaoh, before we get going?
Well, two things. Obviously, you've got the discount code for the courses, so please take a look at Foundations of Entrepreneurship. It's a great buy at 25% off. Also, we've got our exhibition coming up in the first week of July. Go to the-exhibition.co.uk to take a look at some of the artists we've got involved. It's going to be a really good event. It's going to be free, based in central London. So please subscribe to the email database, and that's where you're going to get all the latest information about that.
And yes, just before we get going, Pharaoh, I need to get either a Pepsi Max or a Coke Zero, and I can't decide which one I want. So in a moment of spontaneous democracy, I'm going to ask the audience, press one if you think I should have the Pepsi Max, and press 2 if you think I should have the Coke Zero. Also, I've been told off by my cultist neighbour, Pharaoh.
The Spartan.
Yes. Well, you see, basically, once my intermittent fasting and energy levels have reached a kind of equilibrium, he wants to start training me, you see. He was like, what are you carrying? Because I came back with a can of Coke Zero and a can of Pepsi Max and a little pack of Peppa Pigs. Right? And I was trying to hide the Peppa Pigs, and he was like, they're fine. He's like, they're absolutely fine.
Really? Okay.
It's the other things that you've got to watch out for. He's like, why can't you have those, though? He's like, any soda will mess with your, you know, it'll kind of, it's sending you wrong signals to your body and so on. You need to cut those out. You can only have, he said, his exact words were, you can only have either like sparkling water or, you know, the herbal teas or what else did he say? You can get like a kind of spitzer thing if you must have some flavor in the water or whatever. He said, I know you're posh, but not Perrier water. I was like,
not Perrier? What are you?
Yeah, he's wow. Like, he's down on Perrier. And
this is kind of like reaching like seed oil territory now, I'm afraid to say.
I'm afraid.
I don't understand why sparkling water is fine, but all the other sodas are bad. You know, it can't be the carbonation.
Yeah, he said there's something in them. There's some chemical they put in them that's wrong. So anyway, this may be my last two because I'm a really good boy and just do as I'm told a lot. With certain things, with certain things, I don't do as I'm told a lot.
Yes, yeah.
But with other things, I do a lot. So, really depends. This
is sad. That's like the end of an era.
It's gonna be getting a lot of two. What was which one? Which way round was it though? Which one was the?
I can't even remember.
I can't remember. Anyway, I'm gonna grab the Pepsi. One second.
Okay. I will continue to plug my exhibition in the meantime.
Right.
Okay, he's back already.
So, last time we covered the first, second, and third generations of video game consoles. And if you remember, Nintendo won the first generation, the second generation, and the third generation in terms of pure video game sales,
yeah.
With the, what was it, the TV Color, the Game & Watch, and the the Nintendo Entertainment System, respectively. However, I would say that in terms of the adverts, you, Pharaoh, probably favored the Atari adverts the most last time. Say that.
Well, I would say that Atari came into quite a stultified market. They ripped up the rule book and really understood about what the consumer was looking for. But then I think two things happened. I think, number one, everyone copied Atari. I think all of the kind of colourful logos, all of the game-focused ads are all derivative from Atari. Yes. But I think the problem that Atari had was not a marketing problem, but a product issue. You know, 10,000 products and no, you know, killer game that people really wanted to play. And again, it was interesting. I thought the most interesting ads at the end were the Nintendo ads by Toys R Us, where they were just being like, "Boom, here's Zelda, here's Mario, here's Metroid." You know, it's big hitters. And again, we're sort of watching in real time the games industry understand about consumer habits and trying to adapt in real time. So I wonder whether we're going to see more of the focus less on breadth of games and more on we've got these big names, basically.
Yeah, I also noticed, by the way, that there was quite the drop off in as time went on. Atari's effectiveness, they didn't really change their message.
The effectiveness of the message
changed, didn't it? It seemed really tired by the end of the 80s.
Yeah, And that's interesting. Again, it's a classic. in the business world, there are different life stages of a business. I don't know if you know about this. Yeah, you've got the kind of rising star, cash, or it's like a question mark, rising star, cash cow, and then dog. Yeah. And those kind of three last stages are the most important. At the beginning, you've got a business that's massively growing, it's innovating. Then it becomes this cash cow where, again, it's just about getting as much cash out of it as possible. And then eventually the brand dies if you can continue to do the same thing. And what you'll find that the best brands do, someone like Coca-Cola and other long-term FMCGs, they will continually do that kind of that kind of process over and over again and try and reinvent itself for a new generation. Yes. And for a new era. And what we saw was they hadn't bothered and it just became a dog. While, again, I think Nintendo's are the masters of reinvention and engaging with a new audience and a new generation.
Yeah, I think Nintendo do a very good balance of respecting their past and their tradition and having continuity with their past while always doing something new, right? So that there's something that demarks each console that comes out. It's usually a gimmick or something, right, that is obviously different from what came before. And it's not just, oh, look, the graphics are better. There'll be something, whether it's the little joystick on the N64, as we'll see, or the stylus on the DS, or the Wiimote or whatever. There'll be something like that, which is one of the reasons I think that they have been so resilient in the games market since its very start. In this generation, we've just been in the third generation, and now we're going into the fourth. And if you remember what I was saying, Pharaoh, last week, or last time we spoke about this, Sega basically got smashed in the third generation, right? The NES destroyed the Master System in Japan and in America, which are the two major games markets. However, in Europe, and especially in the UK, Sega got more of a foothold, okay? For that reason, a lot of there are quite a lot of UK Sega adverts, Pharaoh, today, when we're looking at the sale of the Sega Genesis, which was known as the Mega Drive in this country, right?
Yeah.
The other thing to mention with the release of these fourth generation consoles is that Sega got to market first. They beat Nintendo to the market.
Yeah.
And this is an interesting thing. In Nintendo history, and I'll just, sorry to bore everybody with these details, but it's kind of important for what we're about to watch. Nintendo had the technology and the stuff to make the Super Nintendo as early as 1988, okay? They delayed going to market for, I think, almost 2 years in North America and in Europe especially, because their games were selling in huge numbers, okay? So, you know, the American version of Super Mario Brothers 2, where you pick up the turnips and you throw the turnips, you can play as Peach. And that, in 1988, was the top-selling game in America. I mean, it sold millions and millions of copies. And they had already finished Super Mario Brothers 3, right? So they delayed bringing it out for an entire calendar year. So those adverts that we were watching last time, Pharaoh, the Mario 3 adverts, I think actually I watched some of them after you left. You had to go, and I watched couple of Mario adverts afterwards. Well, those adverts were part of a $25 million campaign by Nintendo. To slow drip release Mario Brothers 3, which didn't come out until almost 1990, I think it came out, like right at the tail end of 1989. I think they finally launched in America, making it one of the biggest selling games of all time. Absolutely, like, huge social phenomena, but also one of the most hyped games of all time, right? Now, while all that was going on, Miyamoto and his team were actually developing Super Mario World all the way back in 1989 for the Super Nintendo. But because the NES games were still selling amazingly well in 1990, they delayed the release of the SNES because they didn't want to cannibalize their existing market. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, and I think what's interesting is that, two things. I think Nintendo early on recognized that these kind of generational warfares, it can be a race to the bottom. You know, if you're pushing, if you're relying on the technology and graphics every single year as your main selling point, that those kind of development cycles are going to increase in speed, increase in cost. You know, you're going to need a new console every single year. While, you know, if you've got a successful market share, you've got a good quality product, people are buying. Again, there is no incentive. You want to hold your guns. But, you know, again, I think the disadvantage is, again, yeah, that they lost a ton of market share. Now, I think having the later release in other products wouldn't have made a difference. So in certain other areas, say, for example, in food and beverage, you know, people, you know, would have waited for that. But you've got to remember that with games consoles, I wonder, because it's such a giftable product, mm-hmm. you know, what are you going to do if you're a grandma, you're buying a present for your grandson, are you going to get the latest and greatest console, or are you going to get the same thing that everyone else has had for the last couple of years? So I think it's a specific sector where timeliness and being first to market is very, very important, as, you know, Nintendo yes. did learn.
There were some... How can I put this? That they did have some good reasons for this delay, though, right? Because in Japan,
you've got a number one market position, your games are selling well. You know, that's the cash cow phase that I was talking about. You want to milk that for as long as you can do, but uh-huh. you know the market's never the same. There's always going to be competitors, so you've got to, you know, move in the right speed. So
what happened in? So I described the situation in America, but what happened in Japan? Is all the games came out earlier, right? So Mario 1 came out in 1985. Mario 2, which was the game that we call the Lost Levels, absolutely difficult game, which Morcar completed yesterday, incidentally. That came out in 1986, and then Mario 3 came out in 1988 in Japan now, okay? And the Sega Genesis, I believe, launched in Japan in 1988. So they were pretty early to market with that. Really, I mean, if you think about... The SNES came out in 1991. They were 3 years ahead, okay? But in Japan, such was the loyalty of the following that Nintendo had kind of engendered already with Mario and with just the NES and with their history. Millions upon millions of fans said, no, we're going to wait. We would rather... So there was something else that came out in Japan called the TurboGrafx 16, also known as the PC Engine. That released in 1989, and it was a massive, I mean, in terms of its technical capabilities, it was massively superior to the NES. Mm. Still, people were like, no, we're going to hold out and wait for the new Mario to come out on the new Nintendo system. So basically, Nintendo had a unique position in the late 80s where... In Japan, they were so dominant that the actual audience was like, yeah, we don't care if these new systems are better. We're just going to wait. We'd rather hold out, you know, which must, I reckon, in the history of advertising and so on, must be a kind of a unique thing for Nintendo to have that position.
Well, yeah, it does. Again, it does happen with certain brands, but I think Nintendo is definitely one of those where... they have the power to do that. The other thing I wanted to mention was just about the global nature of the business. Mm-hmm. And again, the fact is that it's undeniable that the Japanese audience is going to be more loyal, more targeted. So Nintendo can afford to take the hit in the UK as long as they're number one in Japan. You know, so you know, they're operating at a global scale. When you're launching a product, you can't just launch it in one market and make the other ones wait for a huge distance, can you? So
yes. So one of the things that's going to happen during the 90s in these adverts we're going to see is that Nintendo, they bet because of that experience they had with the NES to SNES release, they kind of sort of did the same thing again and again with the N64 and the GameCube. And that really is the period where they if in the long, if you look back in the long durée, Pharaoh, that was the period where Nintendo lost a step and allowed Sony and later Microsoft to sneak into the market. Remarkably, now with the Switch, I think the release of the new Zelda game came out last week. Was it last week? And considering the Switch is basically like a 2014 PC, which doesn't have particularly strong memory card or graphics or anything, they have managed to do it again. They were late to market with the Switch. The Switch is now it's on course to be the best-selling console of all time. And when this Zelda game came out, it got 10 out of 10 or 100% from basically every single games magazine and publisher and so on. And it's it's been massive. So they've somehow managed to kind of, even though we're about to see this period where they lost a step, they somehow have managed to kind of come back using the same tactics. I find it remarkable, really.
There's something interesting here, just from like a corporate strategy perspective as well, because I think both like racially in society, the West, you know, Microsoft platform, etc. You know, they're much more focused on delivering products for their investors, etc. Well, I think that Nintendo have always tried to produce something good in the first instance, and then focus on profits in the second. There's that, isn't that that famous Miyamoto quote about once a product's been released, that's it forever. Do you know the one I'm talking about? I'll see if I can look it up.
I mean, they have had this strategy where they'd rather delay the release of a game. They'd rather delay and get it right than release and patch, if that makes any sense, right? Whereas some of the other companies have been the opposite. Let's get to market quickly, try to get a foothold, and we can, you know, patch up any, it doesn't matter if it's, it'll do type thing. Whereas Nintendo have never really been a company like that.
Here we go. A delayed game is eventually good, but a rushed game is forever bad. And it's, I think that philosophy, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff about how the Japanese do business. And for example, in the 80s, a lot of American businesses looked to Japanese models of thinking and approach because they were so radically different. Are you familiar with like one joke aspect of this is like power foods and power dressing? Do you know that phrase from the 80s at all?
I remember power dressing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But part of that philosophy comes from basically American MBAs looking at Japanese models of doing business and trying to apply it to themselves. So I just think it's interesting that we think of business as this homogenous thing, but actually I think, again, culturally and racially, different groups globally think about business in a different kind of way. And I think this kind of quality over speed has always been a part of the Japanese approach to business in general.
Yes, and the one last thing I'll say, and we'll shut up and watch some videos, some adverts, is that one of the other things I find absolutely remarkable about the Nintendo team, Pharaoh, which I know is a Japanese cultural thing, is that literally the same team who made Super Mario Brothers 1 are still there now. Like, the whole team is still there. Not just Miyamoto, like the guy who did the music, the director, they're all still there.
But again, this is part of Japanese business culture, where, again, your business that you work with determines your social status. People are much more loyal to businesses, and also businesses are loyal to them. I think it's much more of a, dare I say, Ruskinian corporatist approach to business, mm-hmm. as opposed to the Western, more individualistic, I will just hop between one place to another for the best deal possible for myself, so...
Yeah, the one thing I'll just mention really quickly on cultural differences, we didn't talk about the ZX Spectrum last time. And one of the reasons for that is that, technically speaking, the ZX Spectrum was not a games console, but his personal computer, right? In this country, we had ZX Spectrums. In other countries, they didn't have it. It was literally like a UK-only thing. But I have a number of mates who are physicists, Ferro, right? And they are, as you can imagine, nerdy, just like physicists. As you can imagine, an actual physicist is a nerdy character. And he was saying that his when he was growing up with a Spectrum, him and his brother just did loads of computer programming just on the Spectrum. And he's got a theory that one of the reasons that this country massively over indexes in games, in programmers, period, developers, games designers, and so on, is because a generation of kids grew up teaching themselves how to program using BASIC, which was the, in all capital letters, BASIC was the language. Even I did a little bit of that when I was growing up. I managed to program a red square that I could move across the screen. Took bloody hours as well. I think that's an interesting thing to consider as well, though. The culture of the bedroom developer, which is something that is now it's like Steam Greenlight or people like kickstarting their own games or whatever. But that is something that seems to be something this country does really well. I don't see many like Japanese homebrews or anything like that. Whereas a lot of the games that were big on the Spectrum were literally just like two guys in a bedroom decided to make a game. Like the Dizzy the Egg games, for example, came from the Oliver twins who just started in their bedroom, you know. In fact, a lot of maybe even like I'm trying to think of some other Western games designers, like someone like Sid Meier or Chris Sawyer, who made the Roller Coaster Tycoon games. I mean, they all started out as just one bloke in a bedroom, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to guys working for an established company like Nintendo. I just think it's interesting, that's all.
Yeah, I do wonder if it's, again, that there is the cultural elements, but I do think, again, like, is there anything outside of that, again, like the classic English tinkerer, you know, someone tinkering in their shed is intrinsic in the British DNA. And I wonder whether that sort of manifests itself with that kind of early independent gaming.
Yeah. It's very much the computing equivalent of the tinkerer in his shed. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, let's, what do you want? Shall we start with the Sega Genesis, the Sega Mega Drive?
And I'm hoping for some better adverts than last time. What was the slogan though? I've forgotten.
Oh. It's fun or something.
No, it was like a fancier Sega or something. What was it? Okay, chat has to remind us.
I'm extremely excited, Pharaoh, because in my search for this, there is a one advert, and I just can't wait until we get to it. There's an advert which features bullying. Oh my God, I can't wait. So okay,
that's it. I'm ready.
So even though it launched in 88, these seem to be the main adverts that I could find. These ones here from 91 to 93. So
gotta go.
Hey guy, you're the first serious gamer I've seen all morning. Check this out, brand new 16-bit Super Nintendo with Super Mario World. Wow!
What's this one?
Oh, this is a Sonic the Hedgehog from Sega Genesis.
Hey, look at these radical colors, huh?
Wow, Sonic's fast too.
No, over here.
I like Genesis, and it costs a lot less.
Wait, kid, that game.
I'll take Sonic and Genesis.
I can't believe they did that. Are they allowed to do that anymore? Have there been changes to the advertising standards?
No. Well, there used to be a thing where you can't compare like-for-like products and say your product is better. So say, for example, with the kind of Coke and Pepsi thing, you can't say nine times out of 10 people say Pepsi's better than Coke or something like that. But it's slightly different when it's this kind of situation, because it's not an analogous product, is what they would say. It's not a like-for-like product, so you can't... They're not comparing the same things.
What? They totally are.
And it was Super Mario World.
What? Wow! What's this one?
Oh, this is a Sonic the Hedgehog from Sega Genesis.
Hey, look at these radical colors, huh?
Wow, Sonic's fast, too.
No, over here.
I like Genesis, and it costs a lot less.
Wait, kid, a rat game.
I'll take Sonic and Genesis.
Sonic the Hedgehog. More action, more speed. Sega Genesis, it's all.
Is that cool, that advert? I feel like it's a bit cheap.
Yeah, well, there's a few interesting things there. I think, firstly, this is the first like satirization of the existing gaming industry. Like, obviously, it's at a point now where the gamers kind of recognize these kind of dodgy sales guys, and this almost feels like a new generation. You know, we don't like the old stuff; we want something new. But ultimately, this is a price-based gambit. You know, the price is Sonic does everything that Mario does, but we're $50 cheaper. So this is 100% a price and value-based strategy. But it's just interesting how that you've got this kind of self-referential nature to the industry itself. You know, no one's mocked other brands in a similar way so far.
Sorry to bring in yet more video game history, but this was actually the debut of Sonic. Sonic the Hedgehog didn't exist in the 80s. The mascot of Sega in the 80s was a character called Alex Kidd. Have you heard of Alex Kidd? Alex Kidd in Wonderland?
No.
He used to shoot like rainbows. And Sega decided that, well, really they need somebody to go head-to-head with Mario. It's like, oh, why are we getting our asses kicked by Nintendo so much? Oh, everybody knows Mario. Nobody cares who Alex Kidd is, right? So they've developed Sonic as specifically as a mascot. And I don't know if you noticed, but the villain in Sonic games is a character called Dr. Robotnik.
Yes.
Who just so happens to be a rotund mustachioed man.
So, okay.
Well, who does that remind? Who else is rotund and mustachioed, Pharaoh?
Okay, I see where you're going.
You see what I'm saying, right? So
I do, yeah.
Yeah, so they are. Sonic wouldn't exist without Mario, is what I'm saying. He is literally the Pepsi to the Coke.
Yeah, it's interesting again, and I think this is maybe where Sega innovated better than Atari, recognizing the importance of that kind of anchor game and anchor figure. And like you said, like the way they literally pitched the advert at the start was like, here is our equivalent game, which is just as good, if not better than Mario. Also, I loved the guy coming saying, recognizing that you're a serious gamer. So please in chat, if you're a serious gamer, identify yourself. So
a lot more for less.
Sega introduces Spider-Man.
Also, I noticed they've gone with kind of rock and roll and
this is it. It's a definite attempt at a new generation as opposed to kind of the more family friendly stuff.
It kind of reminds me of like the Attitude era in wrestling versus like 80s kind of buttoned up kind of Hogan era. You know, there's a big difference when wrestling started targeting teenagers more, and there's definitely a push for slightly older market as well, I think.
Yeah.
With real web-slinging action.
Genesis!
New Streets of Rage. You control 40 incredible moves.
Gotta get Genesis like nothing ever before. Genesis is so much more.
Sega Genesis gives you more real villains, hot graphics, and killer two-player action.
Genesis!
It's a whole lot more.
Genesis! Gotta get Genesis!
Leading the 16-bit revolution, what do you reckon?
I mean, that's a rubbish tagline. Again, they're really honing in on these kind of big games. I think it was interesting the mention of the multiplayer. And again, you know, I didn't play Streets of Rage. I played Streets of Rage 2, and that was a classic game to play with your at a friend's house, etc. And again, maybe that's, you know, the solo play of Mario versus the duo play of Streets of Rage or something like that. That's an actual USP.
I thought this was stronger just because they're not. I honestly think that the first advert literally made me think of you're thinking of Nintendo doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a danger.
I think value strats are always difficult to pull off. It's almost like you don't want to bring to attention the fact that you're the cheapest in the marketplace, because people just think you're the worst, you see. So
I mean, just to go back to my pro wrestling, I always remember, you know, it was WWF, right, who were the market leaders, and the second company was WCW, right?
Yeah.
And Vince McMahon, the owner of the WWF, WWE, always had a golden rule: never mention the competition, right?
Yeah.
Whereas on WCW, they were always going, you know, it would be like, yeah, we're number one. Unlike those other kind of guys from New York, we're the number one. And it kind of, in a way, if you're the number one, you don't mention the number two. Whereas if you're the number two trying to be the number one, you're always comparing yourself to the number one. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's a beta move.
Basically. Yeah, exactly.
And to me, you know, it almost always backfires. So. Anyway, let's carry on.
Donita Stokes, president of HAG.
It's bad enough that Sega Genesis has the most 16-bit games, but this new Sonic the Hedgehog, oh, he really does my doilies. They say he's incredibly fast. Well, what's the hurry, mister? And about his attitude. Smarty pants! Why can't it be more like that nice boy Mario? Little brat!
Subversive Sonic, disgusting Sonic, boxing Sonic.
Sonic the Hedgehog, now included where you buy a Genesis system.
Yeah, what a little punk.
This is where the trans stuff begins, cross-dressing video game adverts.
It's a slippery slope from the cross-dressed Southern Belle and the punkish Sonic the Hedgehog poking out his tongue and blowing a raspberry. Irreverent.
Exactly.
His whole deal.
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, obviously you've got like the Gen X 90s, your Daria generation, etc., cocking a snook at society. And, you know, it's a clever way of going about it, because Nintendo's so family friendly, so kind of nicey-nicey. So this is a good way of trying to differentiate your character. I bet they did a whole lot of polling around it and just said that... you know, Mario's just too wholesome.
I really despise this early... it's one of my least favourite things in the world, Pharaoh, is early 90s Bart Simpson irreverence.
Mm.
Right? Let's just watch that bit again, right? Think of the Bart Simpson irreverence and watch Sonic now. Watch.
Why can't it be more like that nice boy Mario?
Oh! What a little punk.
Sonic the Hedgehog, now included where you buy a Genesis system.
Tell you, that's how civilizations fall apart, Pharaoh.
It's over at that point. Sonic is the Socratic figure in Spengler's context. You know, he's the Socratic video game, challenging everything, you know, questioning everything.
Yeah, exactly. Why can't you be more like the nice plumber Mario? Oh, look, Michael Jackson. Oh, no. It's not going to get us copyrights. we're going to have to talk over it or something. Let's have a look. But I wonder if that Moonraker game looks quite good, you know.
It got good reviews at the time, I recall.
I think you may be able to play it on the Switch.
Really?
I think it's included on the Switch package.
Yeah.
Are you okay, Annie?
Just desperately trying to talk over the top.
I am.
I mean, this kind of thing again is we've seen it before. If you remember last time, where they were trying to bring in other brands to get the rub on this product. I mean, it's a bit of thinking about it. It's a bit of a weird video game concept to base an entire game off one pop star's music video.
Yeah.
But I think it clearly worked. And again, I wonder whether they just had a platformer ready to go and they were like, oh, we just need to skin it with something. And someone was like, Michael Jackson. Let's just...
Michael Jackson was absolutely huge, though.
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably worth...
That's the advantage.
I mean, there are basically no equivalent stars today. Do you remember when I did that whole thing about how big is Kanye West really?
Oh, yes.
Remember I did that whole video?
Yeah.
I mean, I was just looking in terms of pure numbers. Somebody like Michael Jackson was just. I mean, he still outsells most of the big stars today, even just through like residual record sales and things like that.
Interesting, yeah.
And I mean, do you remember when I looked at who were the top, who sells the most tickets and things like that? Mm. It was like Rolling Stones. You know,
classic, yeah, obviously.
Still, like now in 2023, yeah. The Rolling Stones are still the biggest selling act in the world.
Mm.
So it's kind of a weird thing where there are no stars of a Michael Jackson level in 2023, period. So the value of a celebrity endorsement was massively bigger at this time than it is today, in my opinion. In fact, it's more likely to be divisive now, right? It's like, oh, we've got Lady Gaga. And you get like half of the population be like, no thanks.
Yeah. Apparently there was a film as well. So apologies. I didn't realize that. I just seen the music video. So that does make a little bit more sense. But is that the first film tie-in we've seen so far as well? Maybe.
Well, I mean, if you don't include the Wizard, which is essentially a film long advert for Mario 3, then yes.
Mm.
All right. Goes on a bit. I'm gonna have to go past it because I just imagine his record label will be funny about it. What game is that?
Weird.
I didn't recognize Samsung. That game at all.
They said Samsung something. I wonder if it's for the Korean market or something.
Number one, and to have fun.
Is it
Set
Senna?
Yeah.
Racing game, Saravar Shinkai. And the challenge, Ayrton Senna, Super Monaco GP2, Mega Drive.
There you go. Number one grip. Oh, here it is.
Young Bobby Engels has a problem.
We have to use this advert in some way. I'm already loving it. Watch.
Young Bobby Engels has a problem. He needs to earn the respect of his peers. So he gets the special Sega Genesis fighting system. It comes with Streets of Rage 2. He saves $40. He gets more moves. He gets more control. Now things are pretty much okay.
I said chocolate chip. Say it. Say it.
Do you think that ever happened? You have this nerd who's getting bullied. We'd have to do a little background check on where he's going. By these two jocks with the kind of girls kind of looking on. He gets a Sega Genesis. And then they suck up to him, trying to give him milk and cookies, and he kind of humiliates them in front of these girls who now just want him. He looks like a young Egon. He looks like Egon Spengler, to be honest. But
okay. The advert's going to be the young kid at the start picks up the academic agent's trivium. That's the box he holds up.
Yes.
And then the girls are going to be Connolly and Liz Hurley at the end.
Yeah, indeed. I can't believe that advert.
Well, do you remember last time we sort of saw this where they had the Chad and Virgin guys, where again it was kind of like obviously pitched at trying to make the kid popular. I mean, something like this is never targeting the child; it's targeting the parents because they're going to be time poor, cash rich, and they're realizing their kind of like nerdy son is just getting, beaten up at school, so we can buy him his popularity.
Do you think there was a single kid who was in this situation who bought a Sega Genesis turned it around, had the bullies begging him, and had all the girls fancying him. Did that happen a single time in the entire world?
I think you can probably get them off your back, though. I'm certain of that. There's stuff I've definitely seen where someone who is outside of the main social circle can buy their way in through having a big house or a house party. Do you know what I'm saying? But you never reach the top position. That's just kind of like you're just not the bottom anymore, basically.
He's bought his way in because he's got streets of rage.
Yeah, exactly. But you never end up in a situation where like the leaders of that mini society bow down to you, you know, because they're the ones with the power. That's what it fundamentally misunderstands. They have the social power. So like, what do you have?
How do you rate this actual bullying?
Weak. This is some weak bullying.
Bobby Engels has a problem. He needs to earn the respect of his peers.
Bobby Engels.
So he gets the special second rating system. It comes his name. With streets of rage. He saves $40. He gets more moves.
I mean, did you see him? There's Bobby Engels. I just want to see this shot of him playing.
He saves $40.
Let's look at that little shot.
That face is a nightmare for you.
Streets of Rage 2. He saves $40.
Great. Bobby Engels being transformed into a mega Chad through playing a Sega Genesis.
He gets more moves. He gets more control. Now things are pretty much okay.
I said chocolate chip. Say it. Say it.
Sega! Sega!
What's that?
Whoa. Color. Hey, there's an easier way to get color. Get a Game Gear, the full color portable with over 150 games, like the new Echo, Mortal 2, and Sonic Triple Trouble.
Sega!
It's sweat.
So they snuck in a Game Gear advert there. The Game Gear was famously way more powerful than the Game Boy. It had color, it had graphics that look like that, still got their absolute asses kicked by the Game Boy. What do you think of the advert, though, Farrah?
Again, they're trying to go for this kind of weird, wacky 90s-ness, you know. That disgusting fat man playing a Game Boy picks up a dead squirrel and beats himself into some kind of psychedelic stupor. You can just imagine the annoying creative group that came up with that that scenario. I think again it's just trying to capture that teenage audience, something a bit goofy and funny and that would make them laugh, and it's a bit different. And again, even the associations with it's just like that like a disgusting fat phrenology attaching that view to the Game Boy as a Game Boy player. Again, is a successful strategy, I think. So, I mean, I don't really like the wackiness of it, but I think they should just have, like, Game Boy players are ugly and disgusting.
I feel like there's a risk with it, though, because the Game Boy was massively successful. So the chances are that the guy you want to buy your Game Gear already owns a Game Boy. So how many Game Boy owners would take umbrage at being called a fat nerd in that way? Even if it was true, it feels like you're speaking down to the Nintendo Game Boy owner.
That's realistically true.
You want him to spend money on you.
Yeah, that's true. You're sort of ostracizing a substantial proportion of the marketplace, because again, the whole thing is like your Game Boy doesn't have color. So you know, you want to pull those people across. So I think you're right. I think that was a misstep. And again, I think the rest of it was fine. Again, they're just kind of showing off the games, etc. So,
like the new Echo, Mortal 2, and Sonic Triple Trouble.
Sega!
It swept the country like a plague. Thousands of helpless teenagers trapped in a dull, drab world of colorless video games. But there is hope.
Color?
Introducing Game Gear from Sega. The full-color portable video game system that separates the men from the boys. Game Gear from Sega.
I have to say, there's been a lot of bullying in the Sega campaign, like a lot of social kind of, you know, but you want to be cool, not a nerd.
That's it. Exactly. They're trying to position themselves as this kind of cool, cool grunge teenager. I mean, this advert is just so derivative of the Apple 1984, from the like reverb effect on the voice to the kind of lighting effects, the kind of general dark background. You know, stuff like this, which does show how powerful that original advert is. If we have covered it before, but if you haven't seen it, just Google 1984 by Apple. I mean, in terms of the ad again, I think that they're going for that. Game Boy is bad. Here's the color. Here's the future. I think it's okay, but I think it's not that strong a message. You know,
I mean, they are one step away from saying Nintendo is gay. We are based. I mean, that is basically the message that they've been pushing.
But then just on that, I do think the you know, my wife's boyfriend bought me the Switch is like possibly one of the most devastating attacks on the Switch that's ever been made. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I think that is it does genuinely work in the right context. But I think you need to have, because there are so many soy boys that soy over Switch games, etc. Yeah. You need to have that archetype to be true, and lots of, like, if you're taking the mick out of something, you need to base it on something. And I wonder with a lot of this, you know, it's probably not true. It was just like normal people at this stage playing on the Game Boy.
So. I mean, my wife's boyfriend did buy me my Switch, incidentally, but I'm joking.
Yeah. Terrible.
For those who purchased something other than a Sega Genesis.
Yeah, that's it.
Our sincere condolences.
What a waste.
When you start with a Genesis, you can always add a Sega CD and new Genesis 32X. Everything else is cold and stiff.
Burial or cremation?
Burn it.
Welcome to the next level.
Hey! You still don't have a Sega CD?
I feel like we're kind of tapping into an era of that there was an aspect of the 90s, Pharaoh, which is burn it all down, like in the name of attitude, basically.
Exactly. It's like whatever Clerks, you know, apathetic, nihilistic, ironic. You know, this is like 100% tapping into the kind of Gen X. You know, maybe part of this created the Gen X attitude, I wonder, you know, as well.
Yeah. Definitely. Or at least the Xennials like me.
CD, what are you waiting for? Nintendo to make one?
You have seen the games, right?
Wrong answer, man. Show them.
Everything's extreme. Everything is, you know, no limits. No, you know, we're not stuffy. We're exciting.
Cool. Yeah, exactly. Also, interestingly enough, that's actually how Keith Woods receives his orders from Kanye West. Kanye appears on the TV screen and shouts at Keith instructions.
What are you waiting for? Nintendo to make one?
You have seen the game, right?
Wrong answer, man. Show them.
Want to see more?
Incidentally, a lot of these appendages didn't do that well. The CD add-on and the extra memory and so on. They were trying to keep the Mega Drive going late, like, in, because they did fairly well with the Mega Drive or the Genesis. Yeah. And so they wanted to try to eke out to keep the shelf life going, because remember, it released early. And, you know, although Nintendo were late to market, when the Super Nintendo did come out, they started kicking Sega's ass yet again. And, you can have a look at the figures. The SNES outsold the Mega Drive in the Genesis in Japan and in America yet again. I think maybe in the UK, Sega may have won that one as well. Let me just have a look at the figures a minute. I mean, Super Nintendo, 49.1 million units sold. Sega Genesis, 35.25 million units sold. So a definite improvement on their Master System result, right?
Yeah.
But even though they had that early advantage, when the SNES come out, they did start getting smashed. And a lot of these CD add-ons and things were attempts to kind of win back market share after Nintendo came back in. So
yeah.
Fucking ashes, man.
this is like the ultimate budget advert for the Mexican market, where they had like what they didn't had the budget to put a whole lot of like polystyrene blocks next to a Mega Drive and then just do a whole lot of zoom cuts. That was the entire advert. I mean, that's gonna be one of the worst adverts ever made, possibly.
Do you like the FMV for footage though? That's kind of that was coming in at this point.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
I played an FMV game in this era for the PC. It was called, or for the Apple, maybe. I'd never owned one, but I owned. My mother had a friend who had it, and I used to play over there. It was called Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, with some of the worst accents you'll ever hear in a game ever. It's actually a really good game though, because it's based on the fundamentals of it are good because it's based on an old board game. But that's probably one of the best FMV games you'll ever play. Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. It's interesting how the aesthetic is the same in Japan as it is in America and the West, though, as well, isn't it? It's kind of
I think they're focusing less on like the kind of moody teenager, but more on that kind of rebellious,
rebellious,
Mega
CD. Do you think the little Sega jingle is good?
Yeah, I think that's a great, basically jingle, isn't it? Really, does Nintendo have one?
No, it's just a coin. It's just the sound of a
coin. Yeah,
it's like a little something. Well, you know it when you hear it. It's just a little.
Yeah, yeah. I think the only thing about it is it gets dated pretty fast, doesn't it? Because it's the Sega sound, because it's a very distinctive like vocoder from the 90s, and I think it was never gonna last.
Yeah, it was very time limited to this era.
Yeah.
Whereas that Nintendo,
it's timeless,
coin twinkle or whatever you know, this can still use it now. Sonic the Hedgehog CD from Mega CD Sega. I mean, they very obviously have gone for a kind of aesthetic here. Do you think, as an overall campaign, Pharaoh, at least they have a brand identity and an image?
Yeah, exactly. I think they've got a definite market audience they're trying to chase after. They've got that kind of image, even if it is a bit cursed. And they're trying to do something new at the same time. You know, when you're not number one, you have to do something fundamentally different. to the market leader. You cannot just copy them and be cheaper. That's not as you're never going to win. You're never going to get more than like 20%. This is the thing, is value strategies are so cheap. Like it's such a cheap tactic, because you'll only get a certain amount of bandwidth, because not everyone cares about price. You know, it has to always be bigger than that. You know, it has to be a deeper, more emotional thing, you know.
Yeah, there is also that perception that if you pay more, you get a better product, that some people will have as well. You pay for the best type thing, so that there is a kind of, you know, if you see the Nintendo there for $200 and Sega there for $150, you may think, well, Nintendo is the premium product, right? There could be people who think that, is what I'm saying, when it comes to price. For example, that is the case in shampoo, I seem to remember, that if you get the pricing wrong on shampoos,
yeah,
people won't buy them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cheap or whatever. So,
yeah.
Sega needed to do something to not just say we're cheap.
Exactly, yeah.
Hey, do you really have to watch the rest of this stupid movie to see how it's going to end?
Look, he's talking to another one of his gripers now.
This is Joel now.
Yeah, Joel.
Here, take control.
Those aliens are masters of disguise. Not your typical video game, huh?
You call that shooting?
Better pay attention. Those aliens can look like anybody. Your brother, sister, anybody.
Hungry?
Ground Zero, Texas, only on Sega CD.
Can we just pause on that? There's like that weird cube. Like the words keep coming up. I don't know what... Have you noticed that in all of the adverts? They've had it a few times. Like in the pan, there's a whole load of words. So... Oh, it's welcome to the next level. Oh, okay, I see it there.
Well, welcome to the next level, yeah.
Yeah, okay, didn't see that. That's a good tagline, but they don't mention it at all. So again, it's just like, not, that has not been well used, but that is a good line, welcome to the next level.
There was a weird kind of veneration in this era of slightly disaffected youths, or slightly kind of... you know, of a kind of bad boy. Like, do you remember Terminator 2? Do you remember John Connor in Terminator 2? Does anybody remember that?
Yes, yeah, exactly, yes.
Yeah, he was kind of like not a good kid, right? He was a little bit disaffected. And
exactly, like the anti-hero style, yeah.
I mean, it probably started in Breakfast Club, maybe, where you started getting those much more, like, edgier anti-hero male characters. Basically, every male in the Sega adverts have been anti-heroes, including Sonic. Even Sonic has been an anti-hero in a way due to his irreverent raspberry.
Irreverent nature.
Yeah.
Ground Zero, Texas, only on Sega CD.
Yo, listen up. Do you know what my friend here just called you? He called you a glass-jawed, bird-neck, no-jabbing limp. You gonna take that? Step into the ring.
Pause a second. Sorry. There's something very disturbing about quite an aggressive African American man shouting at these guys, and they're all kind of like quite cowardly. I don't know if you've noticed. Like the last guy was literally cowering in front of the fighting and stuff like that, and this guy's literally just like, again, just something very dark about.
It's like they're being cucked and humiliated by this.
Yeah, exactly.
This sort of thing. Black dude. Yeah.
Exactly. It's very strange. Very strange. Like, you're basically telling your audience that you're weak and pathetic, you know?
Not your typical video game, huh?
Stick him, jab, move, come on.
Right, there you go, left, hit him with... Prize Fighters, only on Sega CD.
I've never played that. That looks quite interesting, that boxing game. Did you see the graphics on it? It just looks straight. I've never seen that game. So look at that gameplay again.
Not your typical video game, huh?
Stick a jab, move.
Weird. I've never seen that game.
Maybe you need to pass on to Morcar.
have a look, yeah. All right, so that's it for the Sega. Would you like to have a look at some Super Nintendo?
Yes, I would do. Yes,
there's the 1991 launch commercial, I believe.
Okay. Let's
have a look.
Words can't describe the endless challenge of Super Mario World, so we let the players do the talking.
Yeah.
Mario World is here. It's one of the new generation of Nintendo games. It comes only with Super Nintendo, and it's like nothing you've ever faced. Now you're playing with power, superpower.
Very goofy advert.
I hated it. Look at my diverse for friendship group. There's the fat one. There's the goofy one. There's the like Run DMC.
I mean, as much as I dislike the Sega adverts, that was trash.
And also, it's like the literal soy face. Mouth. Literal soy face. There we go. That's the cover. That's the cover. That guy.
Oh dear.
That was awful. Like, what is it like? Again, they obviously are trying to go for a broad audience. They're trying to like bring on board, like the outliers of society. But maybe that Sega advert taking the mick out of like the fat Game Boy player was correct. Then maybe that was true.
It's a very goofy advert.
It's very stupid. Goofy, stupid.
It's like, I mean, if I was to draw an analogy, it'd be like Nintendo have pitched themselves as like the MC Hammer listener, and the Sega have pitched themselves as like the NWA listener, or the like the Ice Cube listener,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you know, it's street versus kind of, you know, this is a horrible advert. Let's have another look. This is from 1992. They got the message from. They got our feedback, Pharaoh. Like,
there's some kind of weird, like transhumanist message there. You know, the man slowly becomes part machine as part of the requirement to defeat the game. Interesting.
It reminded me heavily of the film Lawnmower Man.
Right. Yes.
Which I believe came out in 1992.
Yeah.
There was a lot of Lawnmower Man. Kind of iconography.
I remember the kind of like crap CGI from Lawnmower Man, so maybe they're doing
I believe in the end of Lawnmower Man he enters the mainframe and becomes like one
exactly.
with the internet or whatever, you know, or he becomes one with the system, which was a dominant theme of this era. But Nintendo were kind of leading into it. This is like Nintendo was techno-futurism or something.
This literally created the WEF, though, didn't it? This is a generation of men brought up on this. Then say,
young Tony Blair.
Young Tony Blair did this, and it's like, I want to be that guy. I want to be the guy that turns into the robot
to defeat Robot Man.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not Tony Blair. Maybe Rishi Sunak. He's basically my age, right?
Elon Musk. Yeah.
Yeah, and there was also shades of Terminator 2 as well.
Yeah,
but like, Nintendo are on the side of Skynet, basically.
Again, it's certainly better than that first advert. They're focusing on a wide variety of games, and the budget's there. But I don't know. I actually am preferring the Sega adverts right now, personally.
Let's have a look at some more. Here's another one.
Decide to step up to this kind of power, this kind of challenge, this kind of flying, crashing feeling. When you decide to get serious, there's only one place to come, the games of Super Nintendo. No one else creates this kind of experience, because no one else creates these kinds of games. Now you're playing...
Why does everybody play Super Nintendos and kind of... weird Tron-like warehouses,
dystopian scenarios.
It's kind of strange, isn't it?
It's just interesting how, like, again, people in the 90s thought about their scenario, you know, that's, you know.
I mean, because do you remember a lot of the adverts started becoming quite domestic?
Yeah.
Pharaoh, because they were saying, like, get out of the arcades. We're bringing the arcades into your home.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a home computer, home. And now you're not in the bedroom anymore. You're in fucking techno disco matrix world.
No one else. Exactly. It's a illegal rave at nighttime, and during the day, it's where people play the Super Nintendo.
I'll also say there's some, from a gamer's perspective, there's some terrible moments in this advert. Let me just show you a minute.
The games of Super Nintendo. No one else creates this kind of experience.
What is this now?
Because no one else creates these kinds of games. Now you're playing with power. Right,
it was a bit earlier in the advert. There's just a really funny cut where he's playing Sim City, and it cuts to the guy, and it's like he's playing an action game. It's like, dude, you are playing Sim City, so you don't need to press the buttons that far. I was seeing if I can catch that moment.
This kind of challenge, this kind of flying, crashing feeling, when you decide to get serious.
If you're playing Sim City like that, what the hell are you doing? You know,
maybe you've got it wrong, AA. You need to, like, energy play Sim City. That's why you've been losing all this time. Civilization, you just got to spam buttons.
I mean, I am a massive fan of 80s aesthetic. I hate this mid 90s aesthetic that we're living through on this show. I hated it then, and I hate it now. I much prefer the kind of classic kind of in the 80s. There's still rock there. There are still visible elements of modernity and so on.
Yeah,
they kept it so classy and shiny and cool looking, and everything was like classic and streamlined and just looked good. Whereas in the 90s, everything is like, it's either this kind of weird techno world or the irreverent, you know, Bart Simpson world.
Yeah,
I hate it. I've always hated both.
Just look at the shots as well. Look, I mean, it's all about shadows. There's a distinct blue tone to everything. There is an industrial and steel feeling. So it's kind of like you've been led to some kind of slaughterhouse or morgue or something like that. I think it is very lifeless and soulless and depressing. And again, like the 90s wasn't that bad, actually. You know, I think in real life, substantially better, I would say, than today. So it's just interesting. I'm fascinated why did the creative minds who produced this advert in the 90s felt that was the reflection of the society they're living in, you know? I do wonder whether it is like still like an aftershock of that 1984 advert, because that's the first that advert had that was the first one to have that feel, and it's kind of like a generation of creatives then grew up and wanted to answer that advert, and so you end up with like the same color tone and feel of that advert, but just kind of rehashed and reheated for this new generation. But yeah, just look at all of the darkness, the backlighting as well. You know, it's, you can't see who people's faces are. There's a blurriness to it. It's kind of like you've been like drugged or whatever and dragged into this weird kind of like,
there are weird bits in the pop culture that people probably forget about. Like, do you ever remember the video for Michael Jackson's Bad, for example? It's got a lot of shots like this. Or
no,
go and watch the video for Bad by Michael Jackson, and you'll see that there is quite a lot of this kind of people in the shadows type thing. They love, I tell you another thing they loved in this era was smoke, the smoke effect that you'd get in like Laser Quest, the smoke effect with the backlit smoke. I don't know if they've got it in this advert, but
there's a hazy vibe that they've put inside there again. Yeah, you're right. It's a very tight focal range. I mean, I just don't like the creative staging for a lot of these.
So let's have a look at some. We won't watch all of these, but we'll see what else Nintendo were up to. I feel like these have not, neither the Sega nor the Nintendo advert focused on the games as much as you'd hope, right? Like, to me, as a kid, as a literal kid in 1991, the selling point of the Super Nintendo was Mario World.
Yes, yeah.
I wanted it for Mario World first, and then later Do you remember that there was a Zelda Link to the Past, Pilot Wings? Like, these were all good games, right? And it'd be like, I just don't understand why they don't focus on the games more.
I feel like Sega is doing it more. You know, there's explicit references to the Streets of Rage, etc. Stuff like that. But I think, again, I think Nintendo, certainly the US marketing team, is really focusing on like the experience and general feeling, as opposed to, again, those killer apps, which, again, is something that like Toys R Us recognized with the previous generation, but their internal team haven't managed to do so far. So,
yeah, no, there was. I mean, I have read around that Nintendo of Japan were famously unhappy with Nintendo of America for a long time because they just weren't very good. Because there was a disconnect in a way between.
I mean, the only it's not good. I don't think we've seen a single really good Nintendo US advert. Like, I mean, obviously the Game & Watch advert, absolute banger.
But that was for the Japanese market.
Yeah,
but,
exactly. Which
is, I mean, considering how well Nintendo did in America, though, don't forget they won this console war and the previous one with unprecedented millions of sales. Does that, in a way, show you that the advertising campaign is secondary to the product a lot of the time?
Yeah, well, that is a really good question. I think, firstly, they were living in a different era where media consumption wasn't as big as it is now, / the budgets were much smaller. So, for example, like, they wouldn't be buying a primetime slot. You know, this would all be on, like, MTV or something like that. And then secondly, I mean, you're right. I think marketing can take you quite far, but you cannot totally recondition someone. Do you know what I'm saying? You can't, like, market an absolute piece of crap, you know. So,
yeah,
I see it as a virtuous circle. You know, one side helps the other. You know, if you've got a good product, a good advertising campaign is going to give you four times the return, if that makes sense.
One of the strangest things, as someone who's like literally played video games since the mid 80s, right? I think the biggest thing that happens is the time that you spend with a game, right? It doesn't really matter what the game is. If you've spent out like 10 hours playing something, right, or whatever, you get emotionally invested in it in a way that you almost don't with almost any other product. And I still feel that none of these adverts have tapped into that reality of what it really is to be a gamer. They're all still basically trying to sell these as kind of arcade action machines.
Yeah.
It's all kind of exciting and action. And whereas in reality, the reason that people were loyal to Nintendo is because they'd spent hours playing Mario and Zelda games. And they'd invested the time and the effort and so on. And I feel that there's a disconnect in a way between the way these games are sold and what it was actually like to play these as a kid.
I do wonder whether the creatives doing these adverts probably were brought up on arcade games, not console games. So they had a sort of a different gaming experience, and so couldn't transport that. I think maybe by the next generation, you'll have had like console playing advertisers, if that makes sense. Because I think that personal experience, you've got to remember, it's always, especially when you're targeting youth audiences, it's an older generation speaking to a younger audience, you know.
It's a very interesting point. So you're saying the people who actually made these adverts grew up playing Frogger and fucking Pac-Man or whatever.
Yeah,
and so exactly. Their idea of a video game is arcades.
Exactly. Like which is gonna, again, they're probably, imagine like a bunch of like 30-year-olds. So when would that been? In the 90s, born in the 60s. Yeah. So their Boomers. Teenage years. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, their teenage years would have been in the arcade, etc. So again, it's about that arcade experience. Just imagine all those kind of young boomers get reminiscing of their early days, etc. But none of them had that kind of console experience. And again, that 70s and 80s period was the time where there wasn't that kind of killer app in the same kind of way. There wasn't the killer game as there were for consoles. And I think I wonder, you know, within 10 years we'll have console playing creatives coming through in their 20s and stuff. So
yeah, interesting. I mean, I noticed the recently, I mean, this happened in the last couple of years. There was a game for the Switch called Animal Crossing. I haven't played it, but I noticed the way it was sold and the way it was talked about reflected a completely new market in video gaming, where basically it came out during COVID and loads of women played it, and it kind of kept people company during the long hours of lockdown and so on. And it, like, the messaging around that game is something that I've not really seen before. So I do wonder if there'll be an impact, like the different types of people who play games as well. All of this is very like young men, adolescent men, and they're being sold video games as if it's like riding a mountain bike or something like that, right? Whereas obviously if you've got lots of women playing games or female gamers, that changes the messaging.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there's something I wonder about, because there's nothing inherently about the Nintendo mainline games that are, I mean, okay, you could say, well, Mario saves the princess, but they're not inherently kind of male coded in that way, in my view.
What about Streets of Rage and stuff like that? I don't know. The driving games, etc.
Yeah. Whereas I think all the Sega games are very masculine, male coded.
Right,
So I do actually wonder, like, how many female gamers there were at this point, because they're not being, I mean, I don't want to sound like an SJW or whatever, but they are just completely being ignored by these adverts. There's no females at all in these adverts. And there were in the 80s ones, if you remember.
Yeah, certainly with like the family setting, wasn't it? Or you know, the date night.
Date night, play pong together, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's have a look.
Introducing the next generation from Nintendo, New Super Mario World, created especially for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. It's a bit more exciting, a bit more challenging, a bit more graphic, a bit more colorful, a bit more realistic, a bit more levels, a bit more secrets, a bit more enemies, a bit more friends, a bit more sound, a bit hotter, a bit cooler, a bit weird, a bit more revolutionary, a bit more Mario, a bit more of what you want. It's 16-bit, and it's yours only if you get New Super Nintendo. Now you're playing with power, superpower.
See, as the kid who had the day off to play Mario World and spent hours on this game, I can just recognize that no person involved in the making of this advert has actually played the game.
It's more Mario.
More quirky, more exciting. I mean,
more quirky.
What are you talking about?
Can we hear the list of words a second again?
Let's go back through it. It's only a 20-second advert.
Introducing the next generation from Nintendo, New Super Mario World, created especially for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. It's a bit more exciting, a bit more challenging, a bit more graphic, a bit more colorful, a bit more realistic, a bit more levels, a bit more secrets, a bit more enemies, a bit more friends, a bit more sound, a bit hotter, a bit cooler, a bit weird, a bit more revolutionary, a bit more Mario, a bit more of what you want. It's 16-bit, and it's yours only if you get New Super Nintendo.
Shit. I'm sorry, it's just a bad advert.
It's a bit more levels. It's a bit more secrets. Just imagine the boomers. The boomers around the table looking at this game and like, what do the kids want? The kids love secrets. They love more the levels. They love the Mario.
I remember how I had the magazines. And I used to watch Games Master with Patrick Moore and Dominic Diamond and so on. And there was also a show a bit later on called Bad Influence. So it was on the CITV. And maybe marketing was sophisticated enough that they were able to differentiate between kind of mass casual market and somebody who was actually into games even back then. But I remember the selling points of Mario World being like Mode 7 graphics, which was that when the Bowser thing zoomed in on the screen, that was seen as being, you know, as he said, revolutionary, right?
Yeah.
The fact that it had, was 196 levels, right? The fact you could save it. I mean, these were all the selling points. And the fact it had like massively good reviews, like 99%, 100% around the board, one of the best games of all time. And you just wouldn't know it from that advert. You just wouldn't know any of those things from that advert. It's just, you know, I don't know. That was shocking, shockingly bad advert.
Now you're pretty playing bad. Power, superpower.
Words
can't
describe.
Oh, no.
Get. Oh, look. cover your eyes. You're going to turn into a tranny. And you're immediately going to turn into a trans.
That face.
Always peaceful in the Mushroom Kingdom.
Goldsmithy the sword, Gatchus our rope. Wow!
So with his old enemy Bowser in a marshmallow, he throws lightning.
Are you fucking evil wedding cakes and the killer Venus fly traps and recover the seventh snare?
Grandfather is freaky.
Super Mario RPG, only on the system that keeps on kicking. Super NES.
Dig it?
Strange advert for the Mario RPG.
I think this is an attempt to like Sega-fy Nintendo. So you've got the younger kids there. You've got a grandpa saying "dig it." You know, isn't that funny? That's again like sort of taking the mick out of the older generation, etc. I mean, I think that's quite. That was like the worst kind of snarky taking like. Looking yeah. down on elders and stuff like that kind of advert. And again, it's just like such an obvious ripoff of the Sega ones as well. So it's not even original.
So here we see an average group of WWYD voters, Farrow.
Really?
I mean, there they all are, the homosexual youth.
I see. Okay.
All of these are young Zoomer men, of course.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
What's that there? What anime is that?
How many trans do you think were generated by this one game alone?
Oh, I mean,
young impressionable person, minds.
Every single like, one person in the audience has suddenly transitioned.
Personifying themselves as a short-skirted schoolgirl.
Yes. What happens is you play as this character in the game.
Yes.
Come to identify as the character.
Exactly.
You then want to wear a miniskirt and then you become a girl. That's basically what happens. I think we'll do the last one and then we'll have a look at a couple of the also ran systems and then we'll move on to the fifth gen if you've got time, Farrah.
Sure.
I know who this is going to be. It's going to be Donkey Kong, yeah.
This is awful. Another awful ad.
And I will say that Donkey Kong Country was a huge game. I remember it coming out, and those render graphics were revolutionary at the time. And I mean, everybody played it. It was a huge game, Donkey Kong Country. That was a fucking awful advert, though.
It's interesting from a graphic perspective again, because that does remind me of the 90s. This kind of black background. Can you see the kind of sans font?
Yeah,
like a fat Helvetica, but it's also kind of been stretched out a little bit. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, it's interesting typographically for me. But again, it's just kind of like what, you know, when they were kind of like, oh yeah, look at Diddy Kong, he's a sidekick. Like that's what you're going for. Oh, he's got a sidekick. You know, this is just nonsensical.
Again, if I was writing the advert, you know, it's got 100 levels. You can ride a swordfish
or whatever it is.
You can ride a swordfish. You can, you know, shoot out of barrels. Donkey Kong is back. You know, he's one of the greatest game characters. They just don't hit any of the actual selling points of these games at
all. They just get some terrible boomer puns there. The bodacious beast. Is that even the correct usage of that word?
I mean, I think that whoever was working in media agencies in the mid-90s, specifically for Nintendo and Sega, but especially for Nintendo, they just all need to be fired.
Yeah.
And replaced with people who actually know that. I mean, was this rectified, Pharaoh, like in the marketing world? Is there not a point of contact between the client, in this case, who would be Nintendo, and the marketing agency or whatever who put the advert together? Do they not have somebody saying, like, listen, this is the product. Here is why it's good. Here is what it's got over the competition. You know, sit down and play the game for a while and get to know it. Like, does that not happen? I thought that would have been part of the kind of initial consultation phases. No? Oh, I think Farrow's had to go. He's been called away, unfortunately. So I'll just wonder that out loud.
I'm sorry. I got interrupted there. I didn't hear all of it, but you were saying that, like, what do creatives not feedback? Basically, well, they do. But often with youth targeting such as this, it's difficult because it's one series of really old guys speaking to some slightly younger guys who are still not actual gamers, if that makes sense. So from the just imagine there's like a crusty 55-year-old Nintendo US exec who's been brought in to manage this. He's had a background at IBM. You know, he doesn't understand about youth stuff. And so when he sees something like this, which is kind of like, oh look, isn't this kind of kooky? You know, it's exactly what the kids today like. They're just like Bart Simpson on TV that I've seen, you know.
Yeah, I just feel like if I was running any of these companies, one of the amazing things is that Nintendo of America did have a guy who played all the games. He literally had the real... Do you remember Big, starring Tom Hanks?
Yes, yeah.
There was a guy at Nintendo who had that job. He would get shipped the games from Japan and he'd play all of the games and then assess them for the American market. This is famously how Super Mario Brothers 2, the Japanese version, didn't come out in America because he thought it was too hard. And that's when they made Super Mario USA, which otherwise known as Super Mario 2 to all of us. That dude, I think, left the company in 1991 or 1992 for some reason. And I just feel that there should be a point of contact from the actual company to the marketing exec or whatever. This is the product. Here is why people like it. Here, why don't you complete the game before you make an advert about it? You know, it just feels like there's so much disconnect between the product and the messaging. It's really bad, I think. His name was Howard Phillips, that guy. So he was like the real life Tom Hanks Big.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this is still a time where like marketing hasn't been that well refined still. And what you'll find in like today in modern businesses, they'll have like a brand evangelist or something, like some awful name like that. Someone whose job it is to protect and guard the brand, basically. You know that, you know, with the Bud Light stuff or whatever, that woman from the Bud side, whatever, do you remember, who has still not been fired yet?
She's been put on gardening leave or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, but not fired. Her job is to kind of protect and guard the brand and to decide what direction it goes in. So there is more control about it because, you know, advertising still at this point isn't like it's way more refined than where it was like 20 years ago, but it's still an ongoing thing. And I think they just haven't, I think certainly international companies where again, Japan doesn't understand the US market, so they've delegated it all, and then these US guys just haven't got a clue, basically.
I mean, it's kind of interesting with the recent success of the Mario movie, which I still haven't seen, by the way, Pharaoh, but I know it made over $1 billion.
Yeah.
One of the big things they did this time is they're like, listen, this film is going to we're not just going to give you the Mario license to mess around with and make the terrible Bob Hoskins movie.
Yeah.
Miyamoto and the other dude, whose name I keep on forgetting, there's another dude who's been at Nintendo and was the actual director of a lot of the Mario games. We're going to send you those two, and they're going to be like holding your hand and overseeing whole thing, and you know, correcting you on any little details on the lore and all that sort of stuff. They still deviated a little bit from, you know, Nintendo canon or whatever, but it was still something that the company was happy with, as opposed to just, oh, here's Mario. You
know, exactly. I don't think brands at this time had as much, they hadn't seen some kind of blow ups in the same kind of way that we've seen, you know. So I think there was just less focus on protecting the brand. You know, it's the most important thing, how you're seen.
So let's have a very quick look at the TurboGrafx, the PC Engine. Now, this was, I mean, I say big in Japan, it sold some units in Japan, right? The PC Engine. And if you actually look at some of the graphics on the games that came out for it, they're pretty impressive even now. Like they really, it was an impressive system, the PC Engine. I don't think it came out here. I think it got an American release and it got a Japanese release, but
right.
I have only ever played these games on emulator. There's a game called PC Harold Murder Club that I was tracking down, and you know, nerd that I am, Pharaoh, I had to have a TurboGrafx emulator to play it. And there's a few other games that came out. Try to remember who the manufacturer was of that. NEC were the manufacturer. Nippon Electronic Company Limited. I'm trying to see how many they sold. 10 million units, right? So not terrible, but also not like, you know, Nintendo did 50 million. So,
I mean, if you just look at the brand identity here, it's interesting because this already feels quite tired. You know, this feels like it could be from the 80s rather than in the 90s, just the logo. Also, it does the double annoyance of shortening the PH to an F and then the ICS to an X, you know, double letter shortening just so you can get five letters. Disgust me.
I will say, in fairness to it, this is a 1989 advert, so
okay,
that we're a little bit behind where we were, but this was the launch one as far as I can tell. So
yeah,
you are about to witness the future in video game entertainment. The TurboGrafx 16 Entertainment Super.
Nice.
Whose idea was it to put that man's massive,
just psychotic face? It's Christmas time. The child is unwrapping his box, and then he peeks through, and it's the manic face of a man who's about to murder you in your sleep.
First system. 16-bit power, arcade quality graphics, and an unbeatable selection of titles. We'll show you what's available now and sneak previews of what's coming.
I mean,
heavy Bill and Ted vibe there, but
look. But also it's like, is that what you want to do? It's like you're literally being electrocuted as you open up the box there. Again, it's terrible.
I will say that's Street Fighter 1. That's Ryu, and this is a character called Mike. That is basically arcade quality graphics. That's pretty good. That's exactly what I look like in the arcades. So that's significantly more kind of more impressive than what else was out in 1989.
Toast! TurboGrafx 16, the next generation video game system with the performance and power.
Look at that. It's good, isn't it? graphics wise, it's amazing.
Blow you away. Turbo Graphics 16. Turbo for speed. Graphics for unbelievable graphics, with 10 times the colors of most other video games. And 16 for the high-energy 16-bit graphics processor that makes huge characters with unreal detail like you've never seen before. TurboGrafx 16 is more than a game. It's non-stop action and awesome adventure. And there's an arsenal of TurboGrafx 16 accessories to make sure the fun doesn't end. Like TurboTap, so that on some games, you and up to four friends can get in on the action. Turbo Stick, so you can control the speed of the game. Turbo Booster, that works with your home stereo system to put out unbelievable sound and vicious pictures. And the ultimate in radical tech.
So what do you think the problem? I mean, obviously this looks really good, but what was the issue, Pharaoh, if you had to guess?
I think it's just like some of the brand identity stuff. I think Nintendo so strong, Sega so strong. It just feels like it's a terrible name, terrible graphics, images. I'm not convinced. Personally, I just need to pop out for 5 minutes and sort something, and then I'll be back. So I will be back.
I'll carry on watching PC Engine video ones, and then when you come back, Pharaoh, we'll switch to Neo Geo.
Technology Turbo Graphics CD. It uses the immense memory of CD software to bring you super intense game playing action with nearly.
Actually, is his name Mike? The other character was called Joe. The blonde one was Joe, and that's Mike. That's Mike right there. Sorry, I got my Street Fighter lore mixed up.
Limitless levels of challenge and excitement. Like in Fighting Street, a Kung Fu-style arcade game with more than just a few kicks. And since TurboGrafx CD is a real audio CD player, you can slip in any one of the sizzling games or any standard audio CD disc and get rocked by mind-blowing CD stereo sound. And to keep your TurboGrafx system steaming, by Christmas, there'll be tons of Turbo Chip game cards to choose from. Each one of them packs more action and punch onto every inch of the screen. Join Keith Courage as he battles alien invaders and restores peace to the Earth. Rescue your girlfriend from the thugs who stalk the streets of Manhattan in the arcade hit Vigilante. Step up to the plate in the incredibly real baseball simulation World.
These graphics are just miles ahead of anybody else, I do have to say. They're really good graphics.
Class Baseball. Take off on an 8-stage sprint from Paris to Dakar in Victory Run, the road racing challenge of a lifetime.
Every single one of these games has been a massive knockoff of other games, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that.
Alien Crush brings you all the sights, sounds, and action of an arcade pinball game. Crush the aliens and rack up a record-setting score. In Legendary Axe, you must penetrate the evil place and free the beautiful maiden Flair. Take hold of the sacred axe Sting and let your...
Give me a break. Every single one of these games is such a blatant knockoff.
Courage shine. Navigate your Nantarian cruiser against the evil Bido Empire. Only the most skilled marksman will survive the arcade hit, R-Type.
Multibody.
You're at the helm of Radical Firepower, a gunhead laser gunship, and in the fight of your life with the ultimate outer space shoot-em-up, Blazing Lasers. Delve deep in the caverns of Odessia in Dungeon Explorer. Your quest, the Aura Stone of Everlasting Life. Your risk, a sudden underworld death. And there's more turbocharged action with Power Golf, Dragon Spirit, World Court Tennis, Galaga 90, Fantasy Zone, Moto Rotor, and it's all made by NEC, a worldwide leader in electronics. Get turbocharged with TurboGrafx 16.
This is the longest advert in history, but it's also interesting just how many games they had and how basically not a single one of them was a hit.
Sophisticated graphics, sizzling speed, and sensational sound. The entertainment super system for higher energy video games.
Now here's a sneak preview of even more great arcade quality hits, available in early 1990 for your TurboGrafx-16 system. Bonk's Adventure. Bonk your way through quicksand, swamps, and wild prehistoric creatures in the soon-to-be...
And the graphics are amazing, but none of these games look any good.
Action hit, Bonk's Adventure. Crater Maze. Watch for monsters, but don't lose your way in the fun-filled action game, Crater Maze. Deep Blue, the menacing underwater world of Deep Blue.
Okay, I'm kind of seeing why the TurboGrafx 16/PC engine flopped. I mean, they did have good graphics, though. I mean, look at how good some of these graphics are. This is 1990 now, don't forget. Unfortunately, not one of the games has any kind of name recognition or value. So there we go. I'll let Farrah is just attending to something, so I'll move on to the Neo Geo. Let's have a look at some Neo Geo action. Now, when I was a kid, basically only the most spoilt kids possible had a Neo Geo. One of the reasons for that is because it retailed at $649.99, which is equivalent of $1,293 today. Well, in fact, $1,293 two years ago. So probably even more than that today. So it was extremely expensive. But the calling card of the Neo Geo is that it could play arcade quality games.
Heck Mega Shock Neo Geo.
Got here. What's that supposed to prove? Talking to you.
すごい奴らが帰ってきた。スーパーリアルアクションゲーム。ユーコロケン
2. So that was an advert based on one of the SN. I recognize some of those. They are SNK fighters. I think it was a King of Fighters. King of Fighters 1, was it? Like that game. I love that advert. I thought it was awesome to have the characters come to life. It was tied into the game. The graphics are just incredible. You know, you compare that to a Super Nintendo or to a Sega Mega Drive. That is arcade quality. I mean, it is just out of this world. However, to buy that, it was not only the $650 to buy the machine, each cartridge was over $100 as well to buy. So that's the reason that the Neo Geo didn't do better. But what an amazing looking system. I mean it was literally it was like having an arcade at home where you just change the you change the cartridge and it changed the game. But it was literally an arcade board packaged as a video game console. So this very much was arcade quality. Very much.
Super Real Action Game. Yukono Ken 2.
You're one of a kind. Everybody over.
SNK.
Metal Slug 4
Mega Enterprise
Upgrade Hoshirane Pfizenjok
Tech Mega Shop Neo Geo.
I'm digging the Neo Geo. Maybe it's because they're Japanese adverts or whatever, but I reckon they've had the best adverts myself.
見たんだよ。嘘じゃねえよ。そんなゲームソフトの噂は。ええ、ゲーム？ああ、そっか。SNK の方ですね。あ、出るんですか、出ないんですか。一言お願い。ゲームソフトの噂は本当なのか。SNK歴代のニュースキャラが総登場。ゲーマー待望夢のチームバトル。The King of Fighters 94。本当。SNK。
客メガショップネオジオ。いい加減に本当の手作りだよ。お願いしますよ。あ、なんか落としました。あ、ああ、皆さん、これをよーく見てください。これが噂の、あのキングオブファイター。その噂は本当だった。SNK歴代の人気キャラが総登場。ゲーマー待望夢のチームバトル。The King of Fighters 94。
King of Fighters 94. Unfortunately, it's very pixelated. That I'm just interested to know how many units the Neo Geo sold in Japan. It did come out in this country. Neo Geo sold worldwide 1.18 million units. So really, I mean, it sold fewer units than the PC Engine CD-ROM, and it sold fewer units than the Sega CD. So, I mean, 1.18 is really not very many. I happen to know two people who owned a Neo Geo. And I tell you what, I played it in person a couple of times. And it was mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. But just overpriced, basically, for the, you know, the home gaming market.
Neo Geo CD,新発売。ついに新装が!
SNK.
Tech Mega Shop Neo Geo。出るんですか、出ないんですか。いい加減本当のこと言ってください。ああ、これ一体何ですか。その噂は本当だった。The
King of Fighters 94 Neo Geo CD で新発売。
SNK。
アーケードを極めたあの格闘ゲームがついにサターンに完全移植。ゲーマーの夢が今感動に変わる。 The King of Fighters 95 Now on sale.
SNK。
We're speed running a King of Fighters 95 advert. That was the other thing about the Neo Geo, really, is that it only really had King of Fighters. King of Fighters, it was like Street Fighter 2, only it was SNK and the slightly different system and so on. Decent games, don't get me wrong, but it's not the strongest brand in the world to sell a entire kind of video game console unit on, you know.
Coming soon.
SNK.
Game will see you up.
Kimbo. Samurai. Reiko no maketa. Kono mama demo.
Soko hakuzaku. Neo Geo CD.
Kou shite. Kochi hayaku. So.
Kakaijo jouzu.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yami ni messe yo.
SNK.
The weird world of mid-90s Neo-Japanese Neo Geo adverts is an interesting world, I have to say.
Ricky won.
Tokyo.
SNK. They wouldn't allow that on TV anymore. SNK. Awesome.
Here, the revolutionary Neo.
I think I'm just a mark for 90s Japan.
Neo Geo Pocket Color. With 16-bit power. Linkable to the Sega Dreamcast. Revolving joystick. 146 color display. Six cool styles. The graphics will blow you away. Neo Geo Pocket. Way ahead of the game.
All right, so I think what I'm going to do here is I'm going to call a bit of an audible. I think this is a good place to stop, actually, because we're just about to go into what is known as the fifth generation of gaming and the release of the Sony PlayStation, and I think it probably deserves a dedicated stream. We might as well just go generation by generation at this point. It's nice, kind of easy content for me and Pharaoh to knock out. So I will say sayonara to everybody here. I'll just double check to see if there's been any super chats. I don't think there have been any, unless I'm mistaken. Let us have a quick look. I'll have a quick look if there's been any super chats, and then we'll get out of here. Just a couple from what I can see. Dollface says, why does the kid look like in that ad look like Barton Fink? Very good question. And Chris Bimer says, no time for the old in-out love. I've just come to read the meter. Indeed. Indeed. All right. Well, just a reminder to everyone, do buy my courses using promo code Mario Law.
Super Mario Brothers 2.
And I will see you again on Monday for the cigar stream. Now get out.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easy.